Nicole has been the director of the Environmental Learning Center since the summer of 2016 and was the program director there for 10 years before that. Nicole has degrees from Colorado State University with a bachelor's in Parks and Protected Area Management and a master's in Environmental Communications. She is also an instructor at the university's Department of Human Dimensions of Natural Resources. Nicole hired me as an educator for the Environmental Learning Center, also known as the ELC, in 2016, and I worked with her there for about 3 years. I've seen firsthand how Nicole's hard work and fun attitude have positively shaped experiences of students, campers, parents, and the people she works with. To this day, Nicole is someone that I admire and a constant source of support for me and for many others that have been through the Environmental Learning Center. Hi, Nicole.
Wow. Thanks for the lovely introduction.
I don't know if you wanted to add anything onto that, but I would love to hear more about you telling us more about your background experiences and how you ended up working as a director.
Yeah. No, I think your introduction was great. So I won't add anything to that. I get asked this question a lot, especially working in a university setting. I often kind of guest lecture or serve on panels on how did you get where you're at today. And so I think, like you mentioned, I got my undergrad degree in Parks and Protected Area Management at CSU. And while I was doing that, I kind of just discovered environmental education. I really had no idea that it existed prior to that. I came to school wanting to be a park ranger, right? So I knew that I wanted to, or I thought that I wanted to work for the park system. It was part of my upbringing, going to all the national parks and state parks and things like that, and just listening to interpretive programs and whatnot. But I had no idea, beyond that you could get a degree in something like that. So when I discovered it, I was a third year student. And so I didn't want to change my major. And we did have an interpretation major at that time. And so I decided to use my experiences, like my internship and volunteer hours and kind of a job to get that experience in environmental ed. So that's what I did. So I took an internship actually in Indiana, at the Indiana Dunes Environmental Learning Center. And that's how I got my kind of toes wet in the world of EE. And I loved it. So I continued on that path. I came back to school. I got a job actually at the ELC as an undergraduate and worked there during the semester. And then I stayed on to do my master's work in environmental communications, not really related to environmental education or the work that I was doing at the ELC, but I continued to work there. And then during the summers, I had some stints working for USGS and in different national parks, mainly Yellowstone and the Tetons. And while I was there, just picking the brains of rangers, interpretive rangers as well. And continued working at the ELC through that time and kind of found myself in the role of program director just because of the experiences that I'd had. And then when the director of the ELC decided to step out of that role, I was, hired on after that to take over his position. So I've been at the ELC for a really long time, which has been great to watch an organization kind of grow and change and learn from the director before. And a good journey.
That is really neat. So What do you think kind of drew your attention to environmental education? Was that?
It's a great question. I think for me, and I think you'll hear this a lot in the field, but for me, growing up, I loved my time outdoors and I felt like those are the my fondest memories are, you know, times when I had kind of that unstructured time outside just to go out and explore. I moved around a lot growing up. My dad was in the Air Force. So whenever I went to a new place, I was also shy, so I didn't make friends that easily. So, but I would always find my happy place outside, like building forts or catching frogs or whatever it was. And I think the opportunity to share the enthusiasm that I have for some of that really drew me to it in the first place. That and most of the environmental ed that I've done has been, or at least in my younger years, was with kiddos as well. So working with children also just, it just fascinated me. They're amazing little beings, and we can learn as much from them as they probably learn from us a lot of times. And I think that that just fascinated me. Somebody who could match me in my enthusiasm, I guess, for being outside.
That is really exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think that, since you've got so much experience in environmental education, what do you think are like the primary goals or attributes of environmental education that you relate to the most?
I think I relate to the most is that connection. So just trying to foster a connection to nature and a sense of comfort in nature. Because I really do believe strongly that if you have that powerful connection with being outdoors, and that's where, and you're comfortable doing so, and that's where you create memories and experiences. I really do believe that that is what, you know, grows you into somebody who cares about the environment and wants to, you know, help sustain it or create a healthy environment where we can. So I think that's probably the biggest attribute. And then there's this other piece I've been thinking about a lot lately, which I think we in environmental education have struggled with over the last maybe 30 years or so. And that's the action piece of environmental education. So it's one thing to try to create those, you know, that unstructured time outside when folks or kiddos are just really interacting with the environment in different ways. But then how do we translate that into people taking positive action towards the environment? And when is that appropriate to do? At what age do we start that process? and I think environmental ed has struggled with that. There's a gap, I think, from that kind of connection or knowledge piece and then the action piece. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that we're working with human beings, right? And human beings mm-hmm. don't act in a linear fashion or always rationally, right? So I don't know, that has just recently kind of fascinated me a little bit.
Yeah.
Trying to get to that action component.
Mm-hmm. I imagine, especially working with younger kids and trying right. to find ways that they can feel like they're making an impact in their community or what that looks like.
Right. And what, I mean, what's appropriate, right, for
yeah.
their ages, like cognitively, but also, you know, what really impacts their life? What do they have say over in their lives? You know, what can they feel that connection to?
Mm-hmm.
What can they really, yeah, again, cognitive, like truly understand? So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you have working a particular? Yeah, do you have like a particular example of maybe a student that you've had or seen through the Environmental Learning Center or other organization that you feel like you've seen that moment where it clicks with the kid, or maybe an experience that kind of pointed you to realizing that environmental education is really impactful for someone?
I think I've seen a lot of moments that relate to that connection piece, so that connection to nature piece, or just the benefits that being in nature can provide. So I guess this many, many years ago, I worked often with a student in kind of repeat programs that had ADHD, and it was amazing. So this is kind of interesting because I worked with this student at the ELC, but then I also was doing some volunteer work with what was then like a small science museum here in Fort Collins.
Okay. Yeah.
So this is the younger days, but and so seeing that student in that museum setting versus seeing that student at the ELC, and just the difference that those two environments and you know, lessons, the way that we structured lessons made on that student was amazing. That was like probably one of my like aha moments of like, whoa, this really, you know, being out in nature and utilizing all of your senses in these different ways can really be impactful for people.
Yeah.
And then I just have smaller moments. I mean, we'll get students that come out to us and we'll try to circle up in the grass or something, and we'll get students who do not want to sit in the grass at all. And then if you just keep modeling kind of like your enthusiasm, your comfort level, they'll eventually kind of get to the place where like, oh, okay. Kind of same thing with getting your hands dirty, you know? You know, it's kind of being like, well, but my hands are dirty. Like, I can't, what am I supposed to do now? And you're just like, oh, brush them on your pants. Like, so yeah. Just really small moments like that. But they just make you realize kind of what you take for granted in your own, you know, life and thinking and the way that you've kind of interact with the environment. Mm-hmm. And just realizing that not everybody does, but you can give people those experiences.
Yeah, I love too that it's not just impactful for the students, but you know, you're talking about how it's impacted you as a teacher. Yeah. And it's really cool to see that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just gives you a lot of perspective and just makes you grateful in many ways.
Mm-hmm. So transitioning a little bit, would you mind talking more about what it's like to be the director of the Environmental Learning Center and what that looks like?
Sure. I think the main difference, at least from being director versus program director, is that my view has shifted, right? So it's a little bit more 30,000 foot, a little bit more all encompassing, it's a little bit less of like day-to-day management tasks, and more, you know, thinking about obviously our budget, making sure that we are aligning with our mission and what we do, making sure that we are aligning with, because we're part of the college, so aligning with the college's mission and that we're talking to the right people there. Roxy just came in the room. Mom is in a meeting. Can you? It's okay. Fine. Honey, I'll come get you. Do you need anything right now?
No.
Okay. It's not till 4:30. Okay. I'll come get you when I'm done, okay? Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I love you. What it's like to work at home.
Yeah. Right. How old is Roxy now? Is she and Kaya?
Roxy is almost 10. She'll be 10 November 7th.
Wow.
And Kaya's 12 and a half. Very tweeny.
Yeah.
Still a sweetheart, but she's got some tween attitude sometimes.
I can't see that. She's always been so sweet.
I know. Well, to others, she's so sweet, but she would not give anybody else attitude. Which is good, I guess. I forget what I was talking about. Oh, role as director. Should I start over? I don't know how that.
Sure, whatever you want to do. Or you can talk a little bit about the mission of the Environmental Learning Center, what that looks like.
Okay, cool. So essentially the mission at the ELC is to connect people to nature, with the end goal of, you know, wanting those people to be stewards of the land. I often do describe the ELC as kind of having a twofold goal, though. So we definitely are an outreach program run through the college. So we take kind of the passion and the knowledge from within the college out to the community. But then we're also a learning lab for CSU students, so Warner College students who are interested in getting that experience in environmental education, because we don't have any environmental education courses anymore, and we don't have a major that's focused on environmental education or interpretation anymore. So it's kind of a way, an avenue for students to get that experience.
Yeah. So how was the Environmental Learning Center established and the relationship with CSU? What does that look like?
Yeah. So the land, so we actually have 212 acre property that's east of campus, and the land that it is on was donated to CSU by the Rigdon family. And they were the last owners of this piece of land. And they donated it to the university with the understanding that it would be used for educational purposes. And that was in the 60s when they donated it. And then in the 70s, the Northern Colorado, what was the Northern Colorado Environmental Learning Center, was established. And then eventually that became the CSU Environmental Learning Center. It was always owned by CSU, but they just changed the name to reflect that a bit later on. And yeah, so it's always been housed in the College of Natural Resources, and it's always run as an outreach program, So, you know, taking some of the knowledge and talent and passion from within the college out to the community. Which is part of, you know, the land grant institution, kind of the goal of a land grant institution, right, is to do that outreach. So we kind of serve that purpose.
Yeah. So as far as staffing goes and CSU students, do you want to talk a little bit about what that connection is and how environmental education plays into their roles?
Sure. Yeah. So we are a very small, a relatively small organization. And so it's myself as director, and then we have our program director, Kristen Wilkinson, and she's actually doing a master's right now. And then everybody else on staff is their undergraduate students. So we hire between, I don't know, 12 and 14 during the academic year, 12 and 14 undergraduate students to work at the Environmental Learning Center. And most of them are educators. So they plan and run our educational programs. And they come into working for us with varied experiences and experience levels. And so a lot of their training is on the job training. So when they're writing lesson plans, they're usually doing that with a staff member who's been there for a little while. And then Kristen, our program director, will kind of look it over with everybody and make sure that it's good to go. And then when they're running programs, they're further gaining experience and knowledge and skills in teaching and facilitating environmental education. So kind of a neat program, I think, in that way. We also have one or two students who do kind of more of the site maintenance type of stuff. So help us take care of the acreage that we have out there. And our students come from a variety of departments within the college, so different majors. So they might have backgrounds in wildlife biology or forestry or human dimensions, ecosystem sciences. So they kind of come from all over and then are able to bring, you know, some of their knowledge that they're learning in class to the programs that they're planning, which is can be pretty neat for us.
Yeah, that's really interesting to just make the programs more interdisciplinary and talk about different topics or whatever they're most interested in.
Yeah. I think so too. I think one of one of our greatest assets is the fact that we work with students, so that students plan and teach our programs. I think that really makes us unique and kind of sets us apart from some of the other environmental ed organizations, at least here in Northern Colorado. So
yeah.
Y'all are very creative. yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, how do you work your environmental education programming, and what does that look like as far as doing outreach for the community?
So what kind of programs do we do? Is that kind of what you're asking?
Yeah.
We do a number of different types of programs. During the academic year, we do a lot of field trips for K-12 schools, mainly K through fifth grade. So they'll come out to us for an hour and a half to 3 hours, and we'll do programming on, you know, whatever topic they want to cover. And we also do some after-school programs. Most of those actually take place at the schools. We have a really cool program that's an all-girls after-school program that we do at a number of different schools. We do programs for scout groups to cover various badges, and then other community organizations, maybe church groups, things like that. And then during the academic year, anytime that the local school district has teacher in-service days, we do kind of all-day programming for kiddos. So we'll take kids for 8 hours of the day and do some exploration and tailored kind of programming on different themes out on our site. And then during the summer, we do week-long summer day camps, pretty much all summer long, which is really, really neat. So we'll get kiddos for the week for like 8 hours a day.
Yeah. Do you think that there are some programs or maybe topics that are more of interest to these school groups or whoever is trying to get a program than other topics might be?
Yeah. Well, I think for school groups, we tailor all of our programs cover, you know, align with state standards. So mm-hmm. I think some of the standards that are might be a bit harder to cover in a classroom setting or more exciting to cover outdoors. So we have a soil lesson that we do with younger kiddos. That's pretty popular. We have lesson focused on insects, kind of the same thing. Anything having to do with the river, we have the Kashlaputa River that runs through our property. So anything with macroinvertebrates or kind of the geomorphology of the river is also, they're also pretty popular, I'd say.
Yeah. So I love all of these like programmings, and I just wonder what this all looks like right now with the pandemic going on. And, you know, I imagine that it's been affected quite a bit at the ELC.
Yes. So we're in an interesting spot being attached to a university. You know, obviously it has many benefits. Sometimes it can be a little frustrating. And so right now we have to follow the university's kind of policies that they set forth. We were able to run kind of a version of our summer camps this summer, which was great. Definitely looked a lot different than it normally did, but we were able to make it work. And then when we came into this fall semester, the university just put out a blanket, no in-person programs. And so we haven't been able to crack that yet. So in the meantime, we're just putting out content. Essentially the local teachers here, we've gone from virtual learning back to hybrid learning to they're just overwhelmed. So they're not ready to tell us what they might need environmental education wise, that kind of thing. We also mm-hmm. can't go into schools right now. So right now we're essentially just putting out information to kind of the broad community through our social media and things like that. So I will say there's definitely demand from parents for in-person programming. So mm-hmm. if and when I'm working on it for next spring, we can do in-person programming. It'll likely look a lot different than it normally does. We won't be working with school groups, as kind of our main focus, or we would be putting together programs for kiddos whose parents just need them to be doing something else, right? Yeah. So probably an after school type thing, but out at the Environmental Learning Center.
Yeah.
What we're thinking. So
definitely sounds challenging. What is your virtual like resources that you have been putting up? What does that look like?
We have our staff putting those together. So for example, we have the first one that they did was really cute. They just put together a video on how to make a nature journal and what it means to journal out in nature. I think one of our staff members right now is putting together one on mindfulness in nature, like using nature to help with mindfulness. I helped put together one this summer for a virtual festival that was going on in town. And so we basically just had a 10-minute clip on macroinvertebrates, just what are macroinvertebrates, what they can tell us about our river ecosystems, and then how to collect them without needing many supplies. And then we invited families to go out and do that. So it's kind of looked like a number of different things, but yeah.
Yeah. That's really awesome that like all of the educators are kind of pulling together and kind of finding ways to make it so that parents and teachers still have access to these things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Do you know what other organizations in the area are doing or?
So we have an organization here that's run through the city. It's the Gardens on Spring Creek. So they're focused on gardening. They've been doing in-person after-school programs that have been really popular. we also have another entity within the city that is working towards putting together a virtual lesson on water quality, like the utilities department is doing that to kind of give out to teachers should they want and need it. Larimer County is putting together their open space program. They're putting together an online geology, like a virtual geology program for teachers because that's their main program. And that's the main benefit that they kind of give to K-12 educators. So they'll be doing that. So it's just kind of a lot of it looks like putting things together virtually to be used, you know, in the classroom and on a screen, or when it can be done in person programming, just a lot smaller in number wise, you know, participant wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think that this content and maybe just kind of reframing the way that these organizations are looking at environmental education from a virtual standpoint is kind of maybe can be twisted into a positive light into the future?
Yeah, I've been thinking about that. and I do because, well, I struggle a little bit with this because I'm a little anti-screen and we're very over-screened right now, especially during COVID. I see it in my own kiddos, right? But I do see benefit. So for example, the Polium program that I run at CSU is a small group of folks who are interested in learning about environmental education. And they normally teach fourth graders up at a local natural area. That's not happening. So we're putting together a virtual lesson on the same topic we would normally teach in person. And sorry, I'm being interrupted again.
This is our bedroom.
Anyway, a benefit that I see is some of the material that we're going to be putting together, I think, can be used like either pre- and or post, you know, actual visit outside to where you wouldn't have to get those, you know, concepts down when you're out in the field, when that time could be better spent doing something else.
Yeah.
So for example, like just what we're focusing up there on, like structures and functions, so essentially adaptations. Mm-hmm. So if we can, you know, put together some virtual content that students can watch and do prior to coming out into the fields, then we don't have to spend that time in the fields kind of getting down the concept of what an adaptation is. We can instead do more, you know, investigation on what we find out there. So I think that's definitely a benefit. And I also just think it's always good to have to start rethinking things, right? We can all get into a rut on what we do and continue doing things for years and years and years. But we all need
that's to. That's a good point. Yeah, definitely. So. I think maybe one of the most obvious challenges that comes up with how things are right now is kind of, and even what you've been saying about how valuable connection is in environmental education, just trying to make those connections on screen sounds so difficult. Like using tactics like inquiry-based learning and having the kids run around outside sounds like it can be really challenging for groups. But I don't know if there's anything else. What other challenges come up with how things are right now?
Part of it is, to get kind of, I'll put my director hat back on here, but a lot of it is, if you're putting out, you know, virtual content, you know, for an organization like the Environmental Learning Center, we do receive some money from the college, but we're largely funded through grant programs, which, you know, usually is us interacting with the public or through our fee for service program. So we charge for our summer camps, we charge for our school groups. So with virtual content, you know, can you charge for that? How much can you charge for that? So I think
that's so tricky.
Staying afloat, essentially, and you read so many articles in the world of environmental education, especially with, I just read an article the other day about outdoor science schools. So residential outdoor science schools are really struggling, and a lot of them are shutting down across the country because they just can't make ends meet, essentially, at least doing what they've normally, you know, done. So
it's crazy. I think I read an article the other day that said that, like, I don't know what percentage it was, but a large percentage of those institutions might have to shut down.
Yeah, I think the number that I wonder if we read the same article, but it was like 60 something percent, I think.
Yeah, it seemed like it was more than 50, which just like sounds alarming.
Or 68, something like
that. Well, what advice would you have for people that are running similar organizations or just teachers from a general standpoint?
Just get your kids outside. Or just go outside. I think is one of the biggest ones. I just see so often, and I think it has its place. Don't get me wrong. Again, when we're learning steps and things like that. But I think not much can replace actually interacting with the environment and actually observing the environment. And I think sometimes we get stuck in this idea that the environment has to be, you know, it's somewhere else, but it's really all around us. There is plenty to investigate, you know, all around us on a school ground, you know, in the cracks of a sidewalk, in a manicured lawn, you know, if you do it right and think about it a little bit differently. So one of my biggest pieces of advice for anybody who wants to facilitate environmental education. What else? I think another one that's just a little bit broader than what we've been talking about is just never being afraid to kind of share your enthusiasm about What you're observing or what you're teaching or when you are outside interacting with kiddos, and that enthusiasm looks different for every person. And it doesn't need to be, you know, big and loud. But just, yeah, being authentic in that with people is, I think, so infectious and so powerful. Because aside from that, you know, connection to nature, at least for kids, it's having somebody who kind of models that for them that becomes so important, you know, in their futures with the environment. So,
yeah. How about what you'd like to hope to see for the future of environmental education, or how that might play a role in our lives in the future?
Oh my goodness. What would I like to see? I would like to see, I would love to see the environment. I'm thinking big here. So I'd love to see the environment in general just not be so politicized. I think that it should just become part of, or it would be wonderful if it just became part of, you know, our civic duty, you know, this is just part of how we are as citizens in a society, is that you take care of the environment. And then I would love to see it, infiltrate our, if you will, our, you know, public education system. I think our, you know, we spend so much of our lives in public education, if you, you know, are part of that system, but so much of our lives in that system. And so if it just became the norm, that this is what we learn about and talk about, and I think that would be really powerful. And then also, you know, I talked about that kind of action component. So filling that gap. So just a little more potentially research, and then focus on, you know, taking kids at the youngest age and getting them really connected, and then taking them through that, you know, knowledge and skills, and eventually that kind of action piece where they feel comfortable and knowledgeable enough to, you know, take positive action, whatever that, you know, looks like, towards the environment.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah, that sounds perfect. We could get all that figured out.
Great. It could be great.
Shouldn't be so hard. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I thought we could wrap up with our lightning round, unless you have any other things that you'd like to bestow upon us.
I don't think so. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. All right, so we've got three questions today. The first one is, what is the best advice you have received?
Oh my gosh. Like in any area of life?
Yep. Just very broad.
Gosh. Okay. No, I'm a big runner, and the best advice I've received is, if it's downhill, run it.
Does that mean run faster, or what does that mean?
No, it means like in a really long race. It was given to me during my first 50 mile race, and they're like, the next 8 miles is a lot of uphill, so if it's downhill, run it. Got it. But I use it mentally. I use it all the time.
Love that. Yeah. Okay, our second one. What is a book you're reading right now, or one you would recommend?
I have like so many books on, I'm looking at my nightstand over here because I'm working in my bedroom, but I have so many books over here. But I want to tell you about my absolute favorite book. I'm going to tell you that one. My absolute favorite book, and it has been since the 7th grade, is The Count of Monte Cristo. And I highly recommend it. Don't watch the movie. You have to read the book.
Okay.
Yes.
Good to know.
The movie's lame compared to the book.
That's great that it's stayed your favorite for such a long time too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. And the third one, what is your favorite bee pun?
Bee pun. Oh, I was totally going to look this up. I'm such a bad pun person.
I struggle with this too.
Bee. I just saw one the other day too.
Oh, no.
Oh, I'm going to fail at this one. Bee. I don't have anything.
Okay, that's fine.
I was totally going to look this up. Bees are fantastic, though. Bees are really cute. I like bees.
Yeah. I bet you do. That comes up in a lot of environmental education programs and stuff, yeah, too. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today, Nicole, and just for being such a positive person in everyone's life.
Oh, yay. Thanks, Hannah.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Okay.